And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop. And when I got the chance to go, I said I should go. And so it opened up.
We were only the small little fish out there, so we are, and we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know. And it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken.
Serious drama in the two televised games yesterday. That we're going to start off with football. Brian Carroll's going to talk to us about the hurling in part two. So Ratoat, they're a man down. They're 3 points down. They're into injury time. They just conceded an injury time penalty, and the game is over. Conan, right? No. Up steps Joey Wallace with a questionable square ball goal. I don't want to put the dampener on it here.
I don't know. I saw you suggesting that. I thought once the ball's kicked, the boys are outside, and that's the rule. Like, they're running the outside of the square. Like, it didn't seem that close of a square ball to me. Like, they ran around the square. The ball's kicked.
No. But Joey was planted in the square.
Oh yeah, but like, he's outside the square as the ball. Like, the boys are palming the ball on from inside the square. So as long as they're inside the square playing the ball, then they're all right.
Yeah, but the square ball isn't just from the kicked pass. The square ball is the pass to Joey, because it was deflected to Joey, who was sitting in the square. But so the question here is I think it was the fullback McGill who got a fist to it. The question is whether if he was inside the square, then it's not a square ball. If he flicked it on from outside the square, Joey was planted in the square, right? Oh. So it was very close to the line, I'm saying. You would be a brave man to rule it out, I suppose.
Yeah. We are putting a bit of a dampener on it. But I think they're in the square once they're palming it. So once they're in the square playing the ball, then they're okay. And Joey can be in the square as well.
Yeah, it was close enough to the line anyways, like I said. And then you get a knee slide celebration, Connor, to an empty terrace, which is fantastic from Joey. Joey's coming up soon. Like, I'm not slagging him behind his back. I'll say this to his face.
The only thing about that was I thought it was brilliant, but Gail Colin-Kell still had a bit of time. Their cornerback then kicked a free, I think, directly to a Ratoat man. And I think a Ratoat
fullback, yeah.
So like, it could have, Joey could possibly have ended up with egg in his face if Gail Colin-Kell went down and got an equaliser or even a winner. But thank God for Joey. And I'm delighted, because like, you don't often see knee celebrations, knee slide celebrations in the GA. And I don't want to do anything to discourage it. So
no, definitely
doing that, the better.
And to be fair, Joey was man of the match in last year's final as well. Like, I mean, that was Ratoat's first final, I'm pretty sure. They've done back to back now, and him as a young fella, man of the match in both finals. So it's incredible. One thing it kind of point out to you here, Conan, is like, I mean, if you have a free deep into injury time and you're a goal down and the referee says you've won more play, don't ever go for a goal in that scenario. Like, we know this. This is just common sense at a stage. When will you ever get a goal? You know, the ones where you have a close in free and you lob it into the goal in desperation. Yeah. Very rarely you'll get a goal off that. Whereas if you knock it over the bar, put two in it from open play, you have a much, look, you still have a very small chance for a throw, like, I mean, to pull it out of the bag, but you have a much better chance knock over that free and then hope, you know, lob in a high ball from play is easier than, you know, these kind of frees that you kind of lob into the square. When do you ever see anything come off them?
Yeah, tap it over, win the kick out, and then you have an easier scenario then. Like, you can either go for a goal again, or you can tap it over, like, go for a goal from a better scenario. I remember Geoffrey McGonigal scoring a goal like that, but that was in 1999 against Antrim, and the fact that I can remember that is how rare it is.
It's how unusual it is, yeah. Like, I mean, the sending off, Emmett Boyle getting the red card, I don't think there's any question about this, Connor. Like, I mean, and this just added to it, because the penalty came for Kells not long after that, and it was a definite sending off. Whether he meant to do it or not, he caught him straight in the jaw. He knocked him out, actually. If he saw how the Kells player hit the ground, he was completely knocked out.
I was really worried for Conall Courtney. It was Conall Courtney, I think, that got the knock to Colin Kell number 12 afterwards, because you could see, like, the slow motion replay, you could see his face kind of just contort a little when he got the shoulder and the jaw. And then after that, he got up to his feet, but he clearly wasn't steady on his feet. And he had to be helped off after. Like, you know, it was easy for maybe people watching on TV to look back over replays and say it was definitely a red. But as soon as I saw it in real time, I said that's 100% a red. Like, sometimes in these cases, when somebody is coming across a guy, the guy that gets hit might end up dipping their head into a tackle or something like that. But that wasn't the case here. It was just a high. Like, listen, I'm sure that Emmett Boyle didn't mean it, but just the collision was terrible. And as soon as I saw,
you have to say Emmett Boyle. He didn't say sorry to the referee. He didn't look in any way kind of regretting thing. He just took his medicine and walked off. Usually you kind of plead your case. I didn't mean it, ref. He just was like, all right, well look, I meant to do it, and I'm after getting caught here.
Well, the way he was hanging around beforehand, to me, looked like he thought he was going to get a yellow. He didn't think that he was going to get sent off at all. And now, in fairness to him, he accepted the decision. But I thought maybe because we had the benefit of seeing replays and we saw how bad it looked. And then, obviously, David Calder didn't have that. But I thought beforehand he was hanging around thinking that he was going to get a yellow card. But, like, to me, it was a red card all day. And to be honest, I thought that was the game up for Rathaut. The Colin Killer seemed to seize the initiative. Being a man down with a bit of time left, I thought that was it for them. But there was still plenty of drama to come.
There was. It was a good, lively game, Conan, wasn't it? I have to hold my hands up and say I wasn't expecting much from this game. And then as I was watching, I was going, geez, this is a really good game. I'm really enjoying it. It was end-to-end stuff.
Well, at the end, it's summed up by that injury time. Like, when you score a penalty in the 62nd minute, like, that's game over. To go 3 points up. And then just, like, both teams actually, I was actually really surprised at the way the game wasn't closed out as well, like, you know, by Gael Colmkill. They were just trying to go back down the pitch and they were clearing balls away, and rather than just running the clock down, it stayed open the whole way through.
Yeah, well, we see the Gael Colmkill Kells, they'd lost 5 of the last 6 semi-finals and they lost them to the eventual champions. And I'd say, like, I mean, you know, they hadn't won it in so long. There was a bit of panic set in, like booting the ball out over the sideline like that. Yeah. Connor, like, I mean, you just go down in that and you win yourself a free, you know what I mean? Or you hold on to possession, because at the end of the day, the panic is on Rathaut at that stage. The panic shouldn't really be on you.
Yeah, but there was he was trying to put it over the top, was he? Like a kick from the ground to put it over the top to somebody chasing down the wing. Like I like at the time, I just sighed at the TV. I was like, oh, what are you doing? you know, and then like that sideline ball ended up being the high ball that came in for Rathaut. And then after that, even as I said earlier on, because the stoppage time had dragged on for so long, there was a couple of injuries. Gael Colmkill still had, like, the ref was always going to, David Coldrick was always going to allow an attack and maybe even two for Gael Colmkill to get back straight back into it. Then they delayed the sideline ball, and then the fellow who ended up taking it kicked it straight to a Rathaut guy, and then the game was up. So, listen, it's just the circumstance. I'm sure Rathaut are kicking themselves today, especially having been in that situation so many times, and I'm sure they're telling themselves that they should have won it. And to be honest, coming up to the last 15 minutes, I could only see one winner, but then Joey Wallace had other ideas. So
yeah, he did. Talking of Joey Wallace, that's enough from us lads, because let's hear from Joey now. I spoke to him earlier and I started off by asking him, how's the head today?
No, it's not too bad. It wasn't a late one, so with the restrictions in place, we kept it. We didn't keep it too mad.
Right, okay. Well, Jesus, if you were ever going to have a late one, restrictions or no restrictions, you'd have it after a finish to a game like that.
Yeah, it was crazy. Now, it'll probably only settle in a couple of weeks, I'd say, because when emotions are that high in a game and it finishes like that, it's just a bit, it's just like everything gets a bit carnage, and it's just unreal to believe at the moment.
Yeah, you must have thought you were gone. Like, I mean, you're a man down, you've conceded a 62nd minute penalty to put you 3 behind. Like, on the law of averages, teams don't usually come back from that.
No, and I suppose that's the beauty of the game. It was actually just a bit of luck. You know, there was nothing class about the way we got the goal. It was just a long ball in, two big lads jumping for it, and it fell my way. And it was just pure luck nearly in the end of the day.
Yeah, because, like, I mean, you're not a big man, so you're not even entertaining jumping for that. You're just positioning yourself saying, I hope this breaks to me.
Yeah, you're kind of just like a striker in soccer nearly. You're just trying to get a tap in, just position yourself in the middle of everyone, and hopefully it breaks your way, you get a rebound.
Yeah. So, like, I mean, talking about soccer, talk to us about this knee slide celebration. You must have thought there was a packed terrace there, did you?
I don't know what to say about that. I've already said I had a bit of a fuzzy head from a bang earlier, and I was just, the emotions were so high, the way they celebrated scoring their goal. I just lost it. I think I just went a bit mad for a few moments.
Yeah, but sure, there's nothing wrong with it. Like, I mean, it was fantastic to see. Like, I mean, that was pretty much the way the game was over after that. Like, I mean, Kells were going to do well to come back from a sucker punch like that.
Yeah, no, and just the way it played out, because normally in Gaelic, you score a goal, you're straight on, kick out, get ready, but just the way it happened so late, I kind of took advantage of the opportunity as well, just to go celebrate like you would if you're playing for a local soccer team.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, I suppose, in Gaelic football, because of the quick kick out, you just can't really celebrate anymore properly.
No, there's no such thing as a goal celebration. That's one thing I think we miss out on, because, you know, if you score a goal in soccer, the whole game stops and watch you celebrate. And that's one of the best things about soccer. So,
yeah. And I suppose GAA players are told, you know, celebrating, you're only a whippersnapper if you do something like that anyway.
Yeah, there's a bit of an old school approach to it. So I get a bit of stick as well for that, but sure, I don't mind.
Come here, you were man of the match yesterday and you were man of the match in the county final last year. So, like, I mean, that's not bad going.
No, I suppose it went well. I try and prepare as best I can for big occasions. I do a lot of work with the athletic club and a personal trainer over in Ashburn called Paul King. So they prepare me very well. So I'm in top shape and form the big occasion. So I have to give them a shout out as well.
Yeah, like, I mean, I suppose from your point of view, your style of play in the full forward line, you're always out in front showing for ball. And Ratoat's style of play is that there's nice little balls being popped out in front of you.
Yeah, it's the way we grew up playing. It was always under Dermot Rooney, since we were under eights all the way up, was always quick ball in, head up and have runners off the shoulder. It's just their style of play, and we try to bring that forward to every year. So it's kind of the way we grew up playing in grassroots.
Right, because I thought the final yesterday was a great advertisement for Mead club football. It was like the conditions were terrible, but it was end-to-end stuff.
Yeah. So any time we've ever played Kells, you're always going to get a physical game. You know, they're a very good outfit and you always have to be at your top level, because they force a lot of turnovers on us, and we just have to make sure we take our opportunities when they come.
Yeah. Come here, you mentioned athletics there. You've been training athletics all year along with your brother, Eamon. That was your first game for Ratoat all year.
Yeah, I suppose it's at the start of the lockdown, I made the decision that I was going to, I had 4 months there and I just trained for athletics so I could compete in the national seniors. And I trained with Jerry Finnegan Ratoat, and I did a lot of work with him for the whole pandemic, because it's handy of a track right beside me. So when you work from home, you have the evenings to just go down to the track, and I was doing a lot of work there. And I think it's the one sport that is so beneficial for all sports. It really suits Gaelic football as well. And I've always found if I didn't do athletics, I would never be anywhere. It's what's made me the player I am, is athletics. So
yeah, but still you have to kick the ball over the bar, and you scored 3 from play. Like, I mean, were you tipping away with the ball at all? Like, you only came back before the semi-final and you weren't used at all in that game.
Yeah, I know. I suppose I do practice my skills as well on the side. You know, we've Colin Malley in with Mead as well, and he gives us stuff. He was giving us drill to do on the side. So I was doing that as well. I do my athletic session, get that because I need all my energy for that, and then I do all my drills after. And I suppose when you have people like that looking after you, you're always going to be prepared well.
So, like, I mean, you say you weren't in with Ratoat because you concentrated on athletics. Other people would say you stepped off the panel because you were annoyed about the way Davy Byrne had to stand down. Any truth to that?
No, that is true as well. Yeah, I did. It was the big deciding factor was the way Davy Byrne was treated last year. You know, the way he was got rid of, I just couldn't get my head around. I couldn't agree with it. We had a plan in place to build for the future under him, and it was just taken away. And we just had no say in it. And look, this is no disrespect to Ryan Farrell anyway. He did a brilliant job this year. I couldn't accept what happened to Davy Byrne last year, because I thought we were going to build something special and push on for the future under him, and have that taken away. I couldn't accept it.
So give the people listening an idea of what happened to Davy Byrne then.
Look, it's a tricky one, because there's a lot of ins and outs, but I think there was different committees and stuff. Basically, they backstabbed them and they got rid of them. I don't know what their agenda was. I don't know all the ins and outs of it, but that's what I gathered from it. And I just still can't understand why it happened. You know, he just wanted the best for the team, and look, whatever happened, happened. And as I said, it's I just found it really hard to move on from. I don't know the ins and outs of it all, but I have to just as well congratulate Brian Farrell and this year's management team for doing a fantastic job as well.
Yeah, so like, I mean, you and Eamon stepped down because of the way Davy Byrne was treated. Davy Byrne obviously did such a brilliant job with Ratod. Were other players disgruntled? Were other teammates of yours saying, lads, come on back, you know, this is a bit extreme? Or were they kind of in agreement with you?
There was a few that were in agreement with us. And then there was a few that weren't. So there was kind of a bit of a split there as well. But
right.
Look, we came together then and we sorted it out. We end up winning the championship. So look, it turned in positive. And then because our team is majority young lads, like they just want to play football and have yeah. nothing against them. So our team is 80% young lads. So at the end of the day, they just want to play football and have nothing against them at all. So.
Right. Okay. And like, I mean, you only found out on Saturday that you were going to start the final. Because like I said, you and Eamon came back for the semi-final. You were unused subs. And then, you know, you're preparing for the final. You were wearing a subs jersey. You found out only on Saturday that you were going to be starting.
Yeah. I being honest with you, I had absolutely no clue I was going to start. Like, I was playing pitchable on the hill of Tara on Saturday with a couple of mates and I was actually in the coffee shop. I was like, sure, I'm not starting tomorrow here. This is in the afternoon. I was like, sure, I'll have some chocolate biscuit cake here. It doesn't matter. And I fucking got a phone call then that evening to say I was starting. I was like, oh, better get the head right here now and get sorted for tomorrow.
Jeez, well, I'd say it would take more than chocolate biscuit cake to slow you down there.
Yeah, so if the work is done, then that's not going to have much of an effect. But you have to switch the mindset because when you're starting, you know, you have to be ready to go. And
yeah,
I did have to switch the mindset on that night then.
So what made you go back then? As a matter of interest, for the semi final, was it pressure from Brian or was it your own, you know, kind of idea of missing out?
I see. Look, it was to play for Mead as well was the big deciding factor. If I want to play for Mead, I have to play for Toe. And as well,
really?
Out in a championship. I always want to win a championship as well. So to win a championship was a big factor as well.
Right. So like you wouldn't have been able to play with Meath had you not lined out for your club that year.
Yeah, that's what I was told. So,
right.
The way it worked out it worked out brilliantly. Look, I've a lot of time for the lads in the team and for them to even accept us coming back, I've huge amount of respect for them as well.
Yeah, and like, I mean, you know, in your head now after winning yesterday, you know, can you move on from this now for next year, you know, under Brian and be happy enough, you know, and leave that kind of, you know, issue with Davy Byrne and how you were so annoyed about that. Can you leave that behind now?
I can't make a decision on that yet. Like, there's so much going on at the moment. I have to make a decision where I'm doing athletics. Like, I can't guarantee the lads I'll be there fully next year as well, because I'd actually started a Masters in Carlow as well, so I'm very busy with that and work. So look, I'm never going to play for another club. Like, I am Ratod true and true, and that's the main thing. Like, I can't say I'm going to be there all year because of so many other things going on, but I am Ratod true and true.
Okay, fair enough. Come here, I meant to ask you, what was it like talking out in the stand and not having dress rooms on a day like yesterday with horrific conditions?
I actually prefer kind of like when you're outside, I like kind of being relaxed before a game, and when you're in the dressing room, we can get very tense and I hate that screaming and shouting before a game. I like to be relaxed and chill out. And when you're outside, you can kind of get a bit of space and it's nice and relaxed. So I actually enjoyed it.
Right, okay. That's an interesting point about the tension. There is a little bit of tension. And what about at halftime then? You just stayed out in the field as well?
Yeah, you know, you just stay out in the field as well. So you kind of just gather in the corner of the pitch and, yeah, it's how you actually prefer it.
Right, okay. And come here, the double is on next week. Do you dabble with the small ball?
No, I don't. I never got into hurling. Prefer a lot of other sports. But, you know, they have a great team there as well. They have a mixture of two clubs or whatever, South Carolina. So I think they'll be strong favourites for that and hopefully they get it done as well.
Yeah, okay. Well, listen, come here, Joey. I've kept you long enough today after a county final. Thanks very much for taking the call.
No, thanks, Colin. Thanks, Simon.
Yeah, great stuff from Joey there. Mike Cullen, lads, to move on, our Galway champions. You'd have to say that Mount Bellew, my luck, must be absolutely kicking themselves, Conan, to finally dump Corrifin out of it and then get to the final and lose it. Like, I mean, you know, it must be heartbreaking for them. But it's all about Mike Cullen, their captain, Desi Keneally. He's only 22. He said for the first time since 1996, the cup is coming home to Connemara. I didn't realise coming home to Connemara was actually a thing here, Conan, but we know now that it is.
He didn't just say that as well, he roared it down the microphone. It was almost like David Burke on the Hogan Stand steps. It was the speeches in Galway are incredible, and Des Keneally, for a 22-year-old to be speaking with that sort of passion and, like, yeah, just getting it, what it means to the club, and as you say, what it means to the area of Connemara as well. It's beyond his years, I think.
Yeah, us Gael Gores have been down for too long, Connor. That's it. Like, I mean, the cup is finally to us on Down Orham on Curran Agloca.
So easy for Gael Gores, yeah, they can just rhyme it off as opposed to somebody who has to learn it off.
Yeah. You could actually genuinely say that one line that everybody just says.
But I don't know where I didn't know the boundaries of Connemara stretch. Like, Mike Cullen is literally 5 minutes outside Galway City. I didn't think that the boundaries of Connemara stretched that far. I thought it was Outrerard, which is about another 10 or 15 minutes beyond Mike Holland. But it's massive for them. What is it, 24 years, I think? And the last mention I remember of Mike Holland was they won an intermediate. I think they went all the way to the All-Ireland final around 2007. So, yeah, against the odds as well. Like, you'd be sickened if you're from... if you're from Mount Bellew today, given the circumstances, having lost to Carfin in previous finals and having actually finally gotten over the line, and sure that was the monkey off your back in the semi. But as you said, it's all about Mike Cullen today.
Yeah, so Desi, the captain, he's only 22. He scored 1-9 out of 2-12, and it was a draw match at halftime, and Mike Cullen got goals against the wind. And goals against the wind, lads, are like, you know, gold dust. It's demoralizing for the other team, and it keeps you in a game that you might only be scoring 1 or 2 points in, you know. So, like, they were huge scorers, and he was so important. I thought Ray Silk made an interesting comment last Thursday about making a 22-year-old your captain, and we see that, you know, with different examples, Michael Murphy being the one that kind of jumps out with me. But the great advantage of having a young fella like Desi as a captain is that generally the captain is a bit older, and the young lads look at him going, you know, it's just add on to us now again, you know, this kind of attitude sometimes. Whereas if it's a young fella and you get him getting the younger lads who might have the bit of the attitudes, you get them on board, the older fellas generally will have a better attitude, and, you know, you're getting the whole team and squad rowing in the same direction, rather than your 31-year-old shouting at the 19-year-olds going, lads, will you ever, you know, cop on? That's not the ideal scenario.
It's not, and it's probably rife in every club that doesn't succeed. Like, you know, just that disconnect and people blaming each other. If it's not forwards blaming backs, it's old people blaming young people. And yeah, like, Des Keneally is obviously, like, he leads from the front as well. He was man of the match yesterday. He scored 1-9. But the fact as well that he's 22, it's his team for the next 10 years, and all his age group and the boys a few years younger than him, like, they're going to follow him up for the next few years now. As you say, it's not some old boy who they don't know and they've never played with before. It's Des, who they've all seen coming up through Galway minors and probably played with the whole week.
Yeah, no, it's definitely the way to go. If you can get one of the young fellas who, you know, you obviously have to have leadership qualities. You're not just going to ask a young headbanger to become captain and suddenly he's going to, you know, change his whole personality. It has to be the right fella, Connor.
Yeah, I always feel that as well, that it should be representative of the age group of the, like, say, if the vast majority of the team is early 20s.
Yeah.
That there should be a captain that can tune into that more so than that. Like, the danger is there, and I think you hinted at, is that, like, if you have a 30-year-old or somebody over 30, granted they have leadership and they probably have a great attitude or stuff, but, like, there's a danger that there's a generation gap and that they fall into, oh, we did this back in our day and why aren't you like this? Whereas the game moves on. Whereas if you have if the vast majority of your team are made up of fellas of the same age, well, then they're going to listen to somebody. And especially somebody as inspirational as Desi Keneally, who, as Conan said, scored 1-9. But, like, just from, I can't claim to know Desi Keneally, but just from that sort of performance and even his speech afterwards, I thought was brilliant. So
yeah,
he's the type of fella that seems that you can easily get behind and that would easily kind of motivate a team like Mike Cullen.
No, he definitely does. He looks like he was the right choice. So, on Kildare, a tie are back champions for the first time since 2011. And I don't know about you guys, but whenever I think of a tie, I think of Ballymun Kickhams. And I think of them winning a county title Athy won 11, Ballymun in 2012, and then they didn't win it since. Ballymun got to the All-Ireland Club final, but Athy did well in the Leinster Club. They won two games, I think, to beat the Offaly champions, and then lost to Gary Castle and had them on the rack. And I remember actually just thinking, Jesus, Athy might be around for a while. They look like they have a really good, you know, young team coming up, and then they don't win it again. Sarsfields win four titles, Moorfield win four titles, and Athy are sitting there a bit like Ballymun, wondering what the hell's going on, losing semi-finals, losing finals. So let's paint the picture of Athy. These are a team that lost the county final in 18 to Moorfield. They lost the semi-final last year to Moorfield. Have a little bit of an inferiority complex against Moorfield. So 53 minutes on the clock and Aina O'Connor puts Moorfield ahead. Moorfield had outscored Athy 7-3 since half-time. Their best forward, Niall Kelly, had just limped off with an ankle injury before the water break in the second half. Everything looks like to be going against them. Heads, you know, usually would drop. This is Moorfield, you know, the big team in Kildare in recent history. So what did they do? They end up scoring 1-2 to Moorfield's 2 to come back and win it, Conan. So you kind of tear up the script sometimes at that stage.
Tear up the script. That's how you win a championship. Like, game over, no bloody chance. Like, and it's just a great advertisement as well for, like, I think we're seeing this the whole championship, people coming off the bench and producing heroics, like, and the whole way through that, because, like, as you mentioned, Aina O'Connor scoring and putting them ahead. Aina O'Connor was getting into the groove, and they had that goal chance which Roycroft saved, and, you know, things just started gradually turning. Athy just hung in there, and then suddenly Danny O'Keefe has come off the bench and bang, 1-1, and it's like, yeah, you might be, I think we've talked before about sitting with a face on you when you're not starting, but all throughout the summer we're seeing boys coming on and winning championships, not just winning games for the clubs.
Yeah, I'm changing my attitude towards subs. They're not the losers I see them as. They're actually very important members of it. Danny O'Keefe, you're right, he scored 1-1. The obvious, the most spectacular thing that we saw from highlights on this doing the rounds on Twitter was Mick Foley's catch at the end. Now, I can't stress how good a catch this was. This was a launch ball from the right half-back position into the edge of the square, and we know Moorfield have big men. Now, if the Rathaut, you know, winning goal is anything to go by, you don't appreciate how brilliant this was from Mick Foley, who's on the go a long time, until you see what could potentially have happened if he had spilled it or if he wasn't able to catch it the way he did, Connor. Like, I mean, this was a spectacular catch. If anyone listening hasn't seen it, just search his name on Twitter or ask one of your younger family members, if you're not on Twitter, to show it to you, because it's just a spectacular catch from a standing position on the edge of your square at a really important time, Connor.
Yeah, kind of reaching back.
It was the last kick of the game.
Yeah, reaching back, has to claim it, not just nearly behind his head, not immediately over his head, which is an even better skill again. Just really inspirational stuff. And like mentioning Mick Foley there as well, did you see he kind of had a diving interception a couple of minutes before that as well, just to stop a Moorfield attack in its tracks? And I'm not sure, was it level or what the score was at that stage as well, but just a really important turnover and really inspirational stuff. And I just, like Conan is saying, it's a year for subs. It's a real year for veterans as well. Like Mick Foley, Martin McGrath was man of the match, I think, at age 39 in the Fermanagh final last week. And I'm sure Conan will have about a 15-minute segment on Patsy Bradley later on, and a spectacular catch that Patsy Bradley made for Slotneil as well. So yeah, it's been brilliant. But what a way to... it was a fantastic way to win, and I was delighted for Athy to get over the line as well.
Yeah, and Foley got man of the match as well. So, like, I mean, Moorfield and Sarsfields have won the last 8 titles, but now if you want to go back to the last 10 titles, you stick Athy in with 2, Moorfield with 4, Sarsfields with 4. So Athy, you know, can hold their heads up in that kind of company now after winning that. Talking about Derry and Conan, Slotneil, this was a snore fest anyways by the looks of what I've been reading about it. Mahara Felt scoring 1-4 as defending champions, a little bit embarrassing. We know they're very defensive team. Slotneil, probably too good for them, Conan. I saw a tweet from Christopher Mullen, whoever he is. He says, Slotneil win everything. Again, normal service has been resumed.
Yeah, it was very much that. Like, Mahara Felt is hard to, like, I've never had a problem with teams wanting to defend. I don't particularly enjoy it, but like they would justify it with they've won a championship, the first championship, and they got their final this year. So their consistency levels, unfortunately, for everybody else, everybody loves the game, are pretty high. But Slotneil, like, again, we've talked about this. Slotneil got into the league, and that was it. Like, I've played in a team who played this ultra defensive system. We had a Donegal manager and wanted everybody behind the ball. But the first point, we had a list of sort of rules we had to abide by. And the first and most important point was, we absolutely must get into the league.
Jesus, yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's like, that's not a good tactic for a 60-minute game, because if something can happen, you can always get into a lead. And Stocknield got into a lead. He got 3-1 up early on, and that was it. Like, straight away in the first half, I think about halfway through it, they were 3-1 up, and they had the ball for 4 minutes and 37 seconds.
Oh, God. Like, yeah. I mean, has the game not moved? Have Maharafel not moved on from that? Now, I do accept your point, they won a title with it, but Jesus Christ, this is so almost 2011 type stuff.
Well, the funny thing is, Maharafel then started pressuring him after the break and put Stocknield under serious pressure. Like, Stocknield had a real couple of ropey moments then in their own defence, because Maharafel started pushing up and putting them in the places they didn't want to be. And again, that's what players don't want. They don't want players in their face.
Yeah.
It was Christy McKay got man of the match yesterday, and it was probably one of the easiest matches he's ever played. He was just standing around the half-forward line, unmarked, and just running around the place, and he scored two lovely points. He knitted everything together, but he was under no pressure until Maharafel started throwing things at them towards the end. But as Connor says, Big Patsy was there. Like, Maharafel got a goal back, and there was 3 points in it, and injury time, 45, ball comes in, and like, it's the man himself just comes up above everyone and catches it and relieves the pressure.
Yeah, listen, that's fair. There was only two starting forward lines. There was only 1 point scored from play, and the Slapnail defence scored 5 points from play. Like, I mean, Brendan Rodgers, Christy McKagan, these fellas, like, I don't know, Connor, we don't want to go on about this, but how outdated those systems are and how easily they are, you know, pulled apart by a good team like Slapnail. Do you know, the five defenders, you know, coming on late on the play. People know how to handle that defensive system without going into too much detail about it.
Yeah, like, I didn't have much hope for this game when I read the report and I saw that Slapnail got 3 points from their full back line. Now, Conan says that Chris McCaig was kind of wandering around the half-forward line, and why wouldn't he when he was under no pressure? And I think Brendan Rodgers, Conan, if I'm not mistaken, chipped in with a point there as well. But, like, yeah. Listen, we've been through this already. I mean, that, like, maybe Maharafel thought, given the conditions on the day, which were terrible, maybe this was the only way to beat Slapnail. But like,
I know that's their game plan.
Yeah,
Connor.
I know, but it's sad to see, because the game has moved on far. They've been at it for years, but as you said, it's 2011 stuff, and I would like to have thought that it moved on since then.
Yeah, exactly. Right, in Tullamore, that's enough. Slapnail back on top, and normal service has been resumed. Road beat Tullamore. This Tullamore is only 2 points in the end, 1-9 to 1-7. Terrible conditions. Tullamore got a very, very late goal, a convincing enough winner. A nice touch by the Road captain, Niall Darby, at the end. He dedicated the victory to Pat Smullen, the legendary jockey. He lost his battle with cancer last month. So that was a nice gesture from them. Niall McNamee, as usual, scored 5, I think 4 from play and 1 mark. Interesting, Aaron Callaghan scored 1-1. He's a name that jumped out at me, as I didn't know him. He was in school this year. So Malachy McNulty, former teammate of mine, congratulations to Malachy, and fair play to him for bringing in Aaron Callaghan and scoring 1-1 in the county final. Malachy said at the end of the game, he said, everyone in the village that's involved with football and the community spirit is what struck me most when I went here. They're a fantastic community. They take their football very seriously. They live and breathe it, and it's an honour to work with them. So nice words from Malachy, and it just got me thinking again from a Portlaoise point of view, like, there's no community spirit in Portlaoise. Town's too big. We just don't have what Road have. And, like, I mean, I'm often curious about it when you talk about the community spirit and stuff. And I don't know, Colin, like, the big towns, just the reality is, I've said this on the show loads of times, they just can't replicate what the smaller communities can.
Yeah, for many reasons. Like, there's also a lot going on as well. Like, yeah, they've got a different option, but like, it's not the only thing going on in the community. Like, my club back home is it's a town club. It's in the city, but
did you win?
No, Willie, we didn't win.
Oh, God.
We blew it. We were 4 up. Look, congratulations to Greenlough.
So where does your community spirit get you?
But that's what I was thinking. Like, I think we would think we do have a good community spirit, but that's almost because there's almost us against the world in the city. Like, you know, because there's so much happening in the city, but it's like we've got a little club in there that's all about us sort of thing. So it's different if you're a one-town club, I think, with Portlaoise. But yeah, like, I don't know. I do always envy. I always said if we were the side of a mountain like Slough Neil were, would we have won a senior championship? Because, you know, you have players just all around the world and just not as completely and utterly devoted to it as you might be if you were just down the country.
Yeah, shout out to Alan McNamee from Road. Man, I've had a couple of run-ins with on the field for Road and for Offaly, but he's won his 12th medal and an incredible stat. His medal yesterday was 22 years after his first one, lads. That's some serious going, Connor. 22 years spanning your first to your 12th.
That's it. That's serious going. So how many years would span between your county titles, would you say? Or was there so many consecutive in a row?
No, I think 1999 to 2007. So no, I'm not in that category. my career at club and county level tended to be short and stop and start.
you're not quite at Alan McNamee level just yet.
If you're mentioning Alan McNamee with 22 years, just don't ask me a follow-up question to relate to that. I'm in awe of that.
But they nearly lost the Woolley by all accounts. Like Road were in complete control, and then Tullamore got a goal, I think, into stoppage time. And yeah, then they thought they had another goal, as far as it might even be enforced over the line, but it was given a free out. And I heard it was that man, Niall McNamee, that was back to clear the danger at the end. So McNamee, as they have done, obviously, for the last 22 years, Niall has been amazing for them as well, making the difference once more.
Yeah, exactly. So speaking of Portlaoise, lads, Portlaoise were beaten in Laois. It's the first time since 2006, since Portlaoise won't be in the semi-final or the final. Emo beat them. Portlaoise were... they played with the wind in the first half and they only went in 2 points up at half time, even though they scored a goal in the second half, which we said are huge scores. Emo scored the last 5 points with the wind to win it. So Emo hadn't beaten Portlaoise in 48 years. They should have beaten them probably in the final in 2015. Only Zach Toohey came on. That was back when Zach was togging out for Portlaoise. So yeah, it's a bit of a disastrous year for Portlaoise, beaten twice and losing to Emo. Like, I mean, the reality for this is that we know Portlaoise are on the slide. This isn't that other clubs are coming up to Portlaoise's level. This is the opposite. This is Portlaoise completely coming back to the pack. A stat that jumped out at me, I would have had a good idea of it, is between 1997 and 2007, Portlaoise won 9 out of 11 under 21 titles. In the last 13 seasons, we've only won one. And we haven't won a minor since 2012. So this often happens clubs, Conan, when you're so successful at senior level, maybe the volunteers kind of dry up a little bit at underage level. I'm a little bit too busy, whatever. And I'm not criticising anybody. It's still volunteering your time at the same time. And then I suppose when you stop losing, maybe the volunteers get shocked into, you know, going, Jesus, I may do something about this.
That's a very fair analysis. Like, I think that is what happens. It's probably just people just naturally take their foot off the pedal and things.
Yeah.
And maybe the focus all shifts into the senior team then, because you've often talked about, you know, Portlaoise going for Leinster, and like, obviously he's probably could have won that All Ireland at the time. So it's all about trying to get the senior team over the line when they were at that level, and then just the shift focus. There's shifts away from the underage team, and then it's usually when things go bad then everyone starts getting back to basics and trying to build up from the top again. But unfortunately, when you've left those little black years in between, like, that affects the team then in the long run. And it could be is this good for Laois though? Like, are there still the biggest representation Portlaoise in the county team? Like, are they all available?
No. Portlaoise for the last good few years haven't had a huge amount on the county team, like 3 or 4, like, not dominating it. But, like, I mean, it's, listen, looking at it without your Portlaoise hat on, you say this is fantastic for the Laois championship.
Yeah.
Because, like, I mean, let's be honest, it's like it has been like the Leinster championship at Intercounty. It's been completely boring, one-way traffic. Portlaoise winning every year. Nobody, and then you have the whole, it's exactly like the Leinster championship, because Portlaoise are the Dublin who have the biggest pick, you know, and, you know, who are dominating other teams and other teams getting demoralised. Now it looks like Portlaoise are running out of Road, and the Port Arlingtons, the O'Dempseys, the Strawberries, Josephs, these teams, even Ballyfin, who've come out of nowhere, Emo has to get a shout out. All these teams now think they have a chance of winning it. So from that point of view, it's fantastic. Now, none of them will make an impression on the Leinster club. You know what I mean? So you have to kind of look at it that way as well, Connor. But at the same time, Laois will have I don't know. Like, I mean, Laois will have a more exciting championship, but, you know, probably won't be, you know, threatening the Leinster club anytime soon.
Yeah, well, if you said it's not just a hiccup, it's probably not going to be the case that, like, Portlaoise, they may well come back and win one next year, but they're certainly not as strong as they have been you know, in previous years.
They can still win a couple more, you know, they're still in the mix. Like, for me, they're still the strongest team in Laois at the moment on paper.
But I suppose, like, at the start of every year, when maybe Port Laois were at their strongest, I'm sure there's clubs that, like, for all their talk about, you know, wanting to give it a good crack, you know, good crack that year, whatever, they're probably thinking that, like, well, if we're being realistic about it, if we come up against Port Laois, we're just not going to have luck, like, you know. So that can seep into the player's mentality and seep into a team's mentality. And, you know, you mightn't be as driven, let's say, as you would be in previous years. When you see Emo beating them for the first time in, how long did you say that?
Like 48 years.
For 48 years. And you mentioned the teams coming there. They're all thinking this year that are in the next couple of years, they're going to have a right crack off Port Laois, and they could win a Laois championship. So as you said, it's great for the Laois championship if, maybe not for, you know, for any of them to be threatening Leinster in for the foreseeable future anyway.
Yeah, so the Laois draw for the championship, right? Wait to hear this, lads. This is a good one. So during the matches yesterday, the Laois County Board tweeted out that the draw for the semi-finals is not until November the 2nd. So, like, I mean, there's Ballyfin, Emo, Port Harlington and Greg Cullen are in the semi-finals. And these poor fellas, club players, have to sit idle now, not even knowing or being able to prepare for the team that they're going to play. Like, I don't get it. Like, there's a theory here, Conan, that maybe Mike Quirk didn't want the draw made so that players wouldn't be distracted because they have to jump back into inter-county, headspace now. There's another way of looking at it. There's a free weekend next weekend. Like the hurling is on in Laois this weekend, so that's not a free weekend unless, you know, the teams that don't double up with hurling or not dual clubs could potentially have done something. It's hard to know. All I know is that if these teams knew who they were playing, at least the club players, whatever about the players that are in with the county, what about the rest of the lads that are left at home in limbo, not knowing who they're playing and training away?
Yeah, at least just make the draw.
Yeah.
You know, whatever about playing it in a certain time, like, make the draw and let them prepare for it. Like, that's 4 weeks away, that draw. So, as you say, they're sitting idle now when they could all be completely focused their minds. Like, I know they've got a semi-final, so that's fine, but they could be spending 4 weeks now talking about, and they'll know, like, who the other two teams would be in the final as well, so it'd be good prep for that. You'd have a really high standard semi-final and final, and just give them boys something to focus on and, like, make it fair. Like, that just doesn't make sense now to sit for 4 weeks and just do general training.
Yeah, so obviously the situation in Laois is we lost 3 weeks with one of the NPHET lockdowns in Laois, which, look, at the time Laois had completely come out of it. But anyways, I'm not going to get into that or I could be here all day. So Laois lost 3 weeks. So they've only finished the hurling finals next week and the football finals only at semi-final stage. So what's going to happen in Laois is the football, Laois are going to go back into inter-county. They're going to play their last two league games. Then they're going to play Louth-Longford on November 7th. And then they play, if they win that, they'll play Dublin on the 14th or on the 15th. So the county final isn't going to be on till the 22nd at the earliest. And it's probably 22nd would be unfair, really, Conan, because they don't, you know, the teams would only have a week together. So you'd imagine it'll be the weekend after, the very end of November. So, look, I don't know. I don't want to criticise the Laois County Board too much. Kildare and Offaly have run off theirs a lot faster. Offaly have only 8 senior teams. And Kildare have been playing hurling midweek to run both off, whereas that wouldn't really be accepted in Laois. You know, they've had to give them alternate weekends. I'm not criticising the Laois County Board for running late. It's just very unfortunate. What I am criticising them about is not making the draw, which I think, you know, is pretty unfair. I want to move on here, lads. I want to give a shout out to Castlehaven. They're my team in Cork. Usually my team loses, lads. They're down in Mark, where Brian Hurley scored a sideline to level it and send it into extra time. And Castlehaven won on penalties. Mark Collins got the winning penalty. So they play Nemo next week. We'll do more on that on Thursday because we don't have time here now. I want to finish up on two moments of outrageous skill. One was in the Cavan County final. Crosser Lough won, lads. So King's Court, you know, their confidence didn't really follow through. They won. Crosser Lough won for the first time in 48 years. Their midfielder James Smith was man of the match. He scored 3 from midfield. He got a catch and a point from midfield that was just almost Michael Jordan-esque, Conan. Like, I mean, this is just one hand goes out. I think I've seen maybe Kieran Donaghy or somebody like that doing this and catches it one hand out of nowhere. And not only happy enough to do that, didn't hand pass it off, runs up the field and scores a point.
And the most impressive thing was that was against Pádraig Faulkner. He did that as well. Like the Jordan thing, yeah, the one catch is something else because this is a kick that goes to the wing, to the 65, the far 65. So it's a big kick. So the control of his hand to do that. But he's flying across the air backwards as well to catch it. And he just spins out of it. I think Faulkner thinks he's just going to take the mark and he just spins and goes straight, goes right into trouble and puts it over. It's an unbelievable score. We talked about Adrian Smith being kept quiet the last day when James and Stephen Smith were scoring five between them. That was a difference then. So Adrian Smith, sorry, wasn't quiet the last day. He was quiet this day, but the other two boys, they popped up.
Yeah, King scored 2 points in the second half. They'll be very disappointed. Catterlock selector Philip Smith, who's got three nephews on the pitch, one of them being James. So there's James, there's the captain Pierce, and then there's Stephen and Peter in the forwards. He said, "I played my whole life without winning anything at all." And he's talking about league or championship, didn't win anything, got into finals. Like, you know, when you see comments like this from some of the older mentors, Connor, you know, that have soldiered so long and then see their nephews, look, without falling into Conan territory, this is what the GA is all about.
Yeah, that's exactly it. I know, like, in fairness, again, without getting too mushy about it, there are an unbelievable amount of stories like this, and there have been for the last few weeks about teams, you know, there haven't won anything ever, or of like ending famines that have lasted maybe 40 or 50 years. And it just means so much to the community, as we said earlier on. So it means so much to cross their lot there as well. So like, it's, again, Conan's probably your man if you want to get too, if you want to wax lyrical about it, but it's just another great story.
Yeah, I can imagine Mannix, if he decides he wants to play a Gaelic football, not showing an awful lot of interest in the ball, but when he does, he kicks with both feet, which I'm very happy about. I can imagine him, if he ever wins his first county title, I'd say, "How will you ever stop? I've six of them. What are you talking about?" So I don't know. I can't really relate to these lads who played all their life and never exactly won anything. Final one then is Starlight's Ricky Fox. Remember the name Ricky Fox. This is Owen Mulligan territory of trickery. Here, we're number six on his back, actually, but I think he was playing in the forwards. Starlights beat Castletown in the Wexford final. They came from behind as well. So it was Alan Tobin scored two and Ricky Fox scored the last kick of the game to give them a 2-point win. I think they scored the last three. This is on Twitter as well. I would strongly recommend anybody to look up Ricky Fox online and get a look at this bit of skill, Conan, because this is coming in dummies twice off the same foot. And I love this. And I'll never forget seeing it kind of for the first time. Beano MacDonald did it. I went over to watch a schools match that he was playing in, just out of curiosity of seeing this fella Beano. He was only 14. There's one thing about going one way and dummying and then maybe going the other way and dummying back. But to sell two dummies off the same foot, there's something kind of really, really, you know, special about that.
Well, it means that you've really sold somebody up the river. Like, it means that they've actually flown across you and gotten out of the way. And you can see that the two bodies are lying on the ground looking at them. Like, if you are going to look at anything, like, this is the one to go look for. This is one of the finest pieces of skill I've seen. Two dummies, send the two of them to the chip shop, and then just with the outside of his boot on the right-hand side. And remember, they're a point up in injury time. He just needs to hold on to that ball, is what everybody be telling him. And he just swings it over the outside of his boot like that. It's the precision of it is amazing. I am getting mushy now thinking about it.
In actual fact, Connor, we don't see it enough, because if you dummy solo off one foot, the idea that someone's going to think you're going to do it the second time, you know, after buying yourself that bit of time, in theory, we should see that more often.
Did Stephen O'Neill do it against Peter Kelly there for Tyrone a few years ago? I think in the league, I think he did it in Croke Park, where he saw one or two dummies, but he absolutely sent him to the chip shop. As Conan said, the commentator actually said he sent the defender for a hot dog. But you're right, it's probably, you think, whoever's doing the dummy think they got, you know, there's no way a defender is going to fall for this again, so they can't do it. But the first defender, it was so fun, the first defender actually slid in, and I'd say by the time Ricky Fox kicked the ball over the bar, he was about 15 yards away. But as Conan said, the context was the most impressive thing about this. In injury time, the game is up, they're only a point ahead, and this is your final score to win it. That Ricky would be waking up with a smile on his face. Sure.
Yeah, you don't like kind of fast food references to those dummies, Conan. You prefer bars of chocolate, don't you? Sent them for a Mars bar or something like that.
A Mars bar. I like a battered sausage as well.
Oh, so you mix up sweet and savoury, do you?
As long as it's specifically
high Mars bar, maybe.
Yeah, we don't have that in Leash. Yeah, you just kind of say he made an Egypt out of him or something like that, I suppose. Maybe something like that. Listen, we may leave it there, lads. We'll come back with the hurling. Thanks very much, boys.
I'd never be allowed to go off and eat and have a shite like him and go off a slob or whatever. Like, I was always doing a bit.
All I remember is I thought I was going to get clobbered on the way in there. I threw the ball up in the air. I don't know, it was pure luck, no, in fairness. Pure luck. It's fucking bullshit, you've seen yourselves.
Yeah, so the Rockies are back, Brian. Absolutely fantastic game, you'd have to say, considering the conditions. The 33rd championship. So just as teams are starting to gain on them, they've stuck another one up on the board.
Yeah, that's a fact. And a lovely little tweet by them as well. You know, they've changed their password from Rockies 32 to Rockies 33. So a likely touch for that. But a great game. Ebbed and flowed. Could have went anywhere. Particularly, it looked like Patrick Horgan had become the hero once again with a brilliant score just as time was up, and maybe a soft enough free maybe to draw the game up, but it was certainly deserved. It was a soft free maybe, but at the same time they were definitely denied one or two, particularly in that first half, that maybe could have been the difference. But I think overall Blackrock definitely were the best team. You know, look at their enthusiasm, their youthfulness, their use of the ball, their willingness to go for goals. It was unbelievable. Even that the very last passage of play, you know, Connolly should have just tapped the ball over the bar, but just wanted to go head down and go in and try and get his goal, because he probably felt he never scored one. So I just thought Blackrock were absolutely excellent. And look, you know, it was part of the pre-match analysis, and everyone's been talking about they've no real like big inter-county stars, but they've a brilliant cohesive team, and you know, a very, very well gelled unit, and a lot of youth, as I said, and a lot of pace.
Yeah, to remind you a little bit of Killadangan, the way they kind of hunt in packs, and you know, they make nothing easy for the opposition.
Yeah, and like obviously they were hugely hungry to try and get that win, and like it's not easy. Glen Rovers are a very, very experienced team. You know, you do feel for them a little bit. You know, they've lost a few now on the bounce, and probably coming up against the likes of Imakili made it, you know, extremely hard to try and win those county finals. But you know, Blackrock on the day, I think they deserved it, to be fair. But it's amazing, like, you know, they were so in control, particularly in that extra time, you know, 8, 9, 10 points up, and somehow Glen Rovers found their way back into it. I suppose that doesn't lend itself to the fact that they do have Patrick Horgan on their team. He's just unbelievable. Like, you know, he scored 4 points in play, but it's not just that. You know, almost every time he gets the ball, he causes massive danger in the opposition half, and they pulled him down a number of times. So, you know,
a few uncharacteristic wides out of him then as well, though.
Yeah, well, I suppose he showed he was human. you know, that's probably it. And look, the nature of any good forward, he will be disappointed with himself. Doesn't matter what you score, we've all been there. You'll only ever remember the ones that you miss. So he, like any good forward, I said, will be disappointed with those misses, as you said, because, you know, you expect him to score them when he's already slow as that. But still, it was a brilliant performance from his perspective. And look, it was like, what a high scoring event, even apart from the extra time, which obviously, you know, kind of both teams could lose altogether in extra time, particularly Blackrock, but it was very high scoring. You know, there was a couple of great goals scored, but I suppose ultimately it came down to the fact that Blackrock had a bench, and there was a couple of players left off, you know, that maybe had a bee in their bonnet coming on. And the interview afterwards with TG Gatlin was quite funny with Robbie Cotter, you know, trying to pretend that he wasn't overly despised about being dropped, but coming on scoring 2-2, and Geesey's coming on scored a great goal as well, actually, and the sideline then as well, you know, that was a really important sideline at that time, because there was only a point in it at the time.
And the gas thing about that Tyke Deasy's sideline, he was looking to take that short. Like, I mean, you wouldn't think he was a sideline specialist at all. Kind of by his body language, he didn't look like it's not like, right, relax, lads, I have this under control, this is going over. He was standing over it, looking around.
And then almost just had a cut at it. just go for it. And it ended up being a cracking score. As I said, 3-5 coming off their bench, and I'm nearly certain, like, you know, Glen Rovers got nothing off their bench. You know what I mean? No scores whatsoever. So, like, look, that statistic alone doesn't tell.
You mentioned about the free to draw it up. So Patrick Horgan scores an unbelievable score off his left hand side, a skyscraper that dropped over, inspirational stuff. And then, like, the Rockies, they got a soft enough free, you'd have to say, on Alan Connolly. But at the same time, it was one of the most stupid frees to give away I've ever seen. There was two, Connolly had nothing on. There was two, Connolly's only a slip of a lad. Like, I mean, he needs to bulk up big time, but he's a seriously skillful player. But he was going nowhere because there was two big, Glen Rovers were a much bigger team, the two big men in front of him. And there's nothing more demoralising, Brian, when you say, right, don't foul. And then a third lad comes in, you have this thing under control. A third lad comes in and sticks the hand in around him and gives away a soft free.
Yeah, and that's and I think you've described it lovely. That's exactly what happened. That he'd run down a cul-de-sac almost, and he tried to offload it, and it was, you know, the free was blown in around that time, but it looked like he'd actually lost the ball as well. So it was, you know, if you were Glen Rovers, you'd be absolutely kicking yourself, like, you know. But it did seem a case where that free was going to be given if there was any contact at all. That's
oh yeah, but that makes it even more silly.
Yeah, I know. I agree. It does make it more silly, but I think the one in the first half was brutal altogether. His jersey was pulled twice, and it was just waved, play on, and then it went down the other end of the field, and then Rovers got a soft snuff free. You could see a couple of the water carriers or selectors or someone from Blackrock that were going nuts over his eye, but you could definitely understand their frustration at that particular time.
Yeah, what do you make of Alan Connolly? He's a very, very good player, but my God, that man needs a few bench presses. Like, I mean, there's no kind of strength in him at all.
No, there's not. But look, I suppose he brought so much else to his game. You know, you're dead right. He's brilliantly skillful, very, very fast. Savage confidence. You could see he was very confident in the way he was hurling. Every time he got the ball, he put the head down and was going for goal. And as I said, the very very last passage of play kind of summed that up for him. But yeah, look, for Intercounty, he probably needs to bulk up a little bit. But as I said to you yesterday, I don't think, you know, nippy corner forwards are Cork's problem right now. He definitely will be a welcome addition to that panel, but you know, Cork have problems elsewhere.
Yeah, that's probably not what they need. Stephen McDonald was excellent. What did you make of him trying to, you know, that skill that all the top players have to do, just to, no problem at all. When he set up the goal, he tried to whack it off the ground, come back up, it didn't come up, and he tried to do it then later on in the game as well, out around the half back line.
Yeah, and like, that was so funny because he tried to bounce it and completely missed the ball, but with the good surface that now having Parky Queen, it actually came up enough that he could actually kind of flick it back up again, and he half miscontrolled it and everything. But sure, I'm sure he's laughing away at good at that. Like, sure, look, Stephen's a
played very well
Agorish cornerback. Yeah, like he like hugely experienced as well. Like, you know, he's big, he's strong. I've marked him a couple of times, you know, he'll give you a nothing soft. But generally, he looks to offload ball when he wins it, you know, a nice little hand pass out or a dink pass out. So maybe he was getting a bit of a nosebleed as well when he got that far up the field.
One thing, Patrick Horgan, you've alluded to it did in the game that I thought was just absolutely incredible is in extra time, they're down, a ball comes in. And instead of batting it down to himself that it would kind of bat straight out in front of him and he'd have it back to the goal. He turned the hurl slightly, so he's batting that down, so it's dropping on his left-hand side so he can whip on it. It was blocked. Do you remember him doing that? Like, I mean, how many players are able to turn the hurl to be able to get the ball down to ricochet to themselves on their good, strong side?
And Henry Sefton was probably one of the best exponents of it. You know, a high ball coming down the air, there's someone coming out clean, and you just get a hurl up and turn. You're just turning the ball. A lovely little deft touch. You know what I mean? So that in that case, Patrick Horgan was trying to bring it down to himself so he could score a goal. But often you see the people doing it out in the half forward line, where you just turn the ball back and you know what way it's going, so you can turn and arc your run so that you're getting onto the breaking ball. And I suppose it saves you a lot of hardship as well, trying to catch the ball where you can be cleaned out of it. So, it was a brilliant interception, actually, to be fair, because it looked all intents and purposes that he'd done everything perfectly and it was going to end up at the back of the net. But I just thought the one where he threw the penalty, I thought that was, it reminded me almost of Owen Kelly, you know, against Cork, actually, in Munster Club Championship a good few years ago now at this stage. But just where he got the ball outside the 21 and just decided, do you know what, I'm going for it here, and just ran straight at him. And it's very, very hard to stop that, you know, and he got pulled down and won the penalty. I just thought he definitely was defined in his performance, I thought.
Yeah, no, he definitely was. The Glen manager, Richie Kelleher, was saying at 5 points down at halftime with a strong Gale with us in the second half, we would have fancied ourselves all day long. And to be honest, I thought Glen Rovers would win it at halftime. I didn't think the Rockies did enough. They had nine first half wides. And then they obviously get the two goals in the second half. Like, I mean, the Simon Kinefic goal was an incredible... He's a godson of Christy Ring. What a goal this was. Like, I mean, over his shoulder.
The grandson,
Grandson, sorry. And what did I say?
Godson.
Grandson. He just kind of put a bit of topspin on this over into the far corner. It was an incredible goal.
Oh, brilliant finish. And that, you know, that came from Steve McDonald's run. And,
yeah.
You know, he got two goals. And I was thinking to myself, you know, like they had Christy Ring on the jersey and there were all those other things. I said, oh, this man is going to do it now. It's going to be the headline for this man. And you're right, like, it looked, when they got those couple of goals, you know, that's, like, it was kind of like, it was in around, I think it was 2-8 to 14, and then it pushed on 3-8 to 17, or something along those lines. And you thought, right, you're going to start knocking over points now with this win. But they just didn't, to be fair, you know. And, you know, you have to give, I suppose, Blackrock credit for that. It did look like they'd missed their chances. You said all those ways in the first half. Connolly got the chance one-on-one with the keeper, hit the butt of the post and somehow went wide, you know, almost out with the corner flag. So it looked like they'd squandered their chances. And but Glen Rovers never pushed on in terms of point scoring. You know, I think that maybe was their undoing, particularly in that second half.
Yeah, no, it probably was. So three in a row for Thomas's in Galway. Look, listen, this was very, very close. It was a draw match at halftime, 1-6 to 9 points, and Doughty Burke limped off just before halftime. Like, I mean, you know, Turlough Moore performing well, like, I mean, and poor Doughty Burke, because he's so important to Turlough Moore, comes back on then. And for Doughty Burke to go off, like, that man must have been practically on one leg. And for him then to come back on, he's kind of desperation stakes at that stage.
Yeah, and worryingly, like, the reports afterwards is that he's going to have to go for a scan as well on it. So, like, that's not good. Shane O'Neill won't be happy to hear that. And as you said, he needs to be nearly half dead. And he came on and tried, you know, through the kitchen sink at coming down the home stretch, but they just were to be denied. And it's just interesting from St. Thomas's perspective. And I was very critical almost of them after the All-Ireland semi-final loss last year to Burst Lee, where, you know, Dara Burke was hitting the freeze. And I just felt that Conor Cooney was the man to be hitting them. And they changed that yesterday, right. You know, and in a tight game, Conor Cooney, you know, he got the goal, obviously, and a point from play, but he got six frees as well. And I just think, I remember saying at the time, it's like when Cooney was hitting him ahead of Joe Canning, it just didn't feel right. He might be excellent, and I'm not taking anything from Dara Burke, but sometimes there's a feel across the team. And we had this debate, I remember, actually, after the league final last year with Stephen Bennett and Pádraig Matheny as well. It just unsettles, maybe... not just the players themselves, but, you know, the rest of the team and even the supporters. And it's like, if he misses one, it's like, oh, sure, why isn't Cooney hitting them? And, you know, that kind of way. So
I just
find that a noticeable that Cooney was back on him. And, you know, I think ultimately he has done it on the big day time and time again. You know, and that's not taken from Dara Burke. I just think it settles the team a little bit more.
No, I think you're right. Speaking of, if Doughty Burke is out, injured, if the news of the scan comes back, bad news. Fintan Burke played at full back yesterday. Mister, I can play anywhere, wing back, wing forward. It doesn't matter for Fintan Burke. There's your bell going off in school, Brian. Fintan Burke can play anywhere.
I'll get me school back and back to school.
We won't.
Fintan Burke, you know, cruelly denied last year with the crucial injury in the you know, the year previous, and it just probably never gave him a chance to really set the you know, himself up in county wise. So you'd be hoping that you know, he can get a run of form. You know, he can bring in Shane Cooney there as well. He did well during the league. So, you know, Thomason have a bit to offer in terms of what Galway have. Look, they've won three in a row now. They're masters of winning tight games. They're a credit to their club. Like, you know, they've never won one previous to, I think it was 2012, I think was their first win. So, you know, they're a fantastic club. And the tighter it gets, the nearly the better they come in Galway Championship. And, you know, the fact that it wasn't a great day yesterday probably played into their hands as well.
Yeah, before you go and your students are going mad throwing paper aeroplanes all over the class, Clonkill beat Casado Gagan after extra time. Incredible. Brendan Murta scored 12 points. An incredible servant. And a shout out to Paddy McDowell, who won a football championship with St. Lomans last week. He's 14 medals. But Brendan Murta, like, I mean, still doing it, Brian. And Clonkill won 3 in a row.
Yeah, look, so Clonkill again, they've been very unlucky in Leinster Club Championship over the last number of years. You know, they ran Ballyboden the extra time last year. And, you know, they're an excellent team. They're as good as any club team that's out there, and huge experience as well. They've taken over probably the mantle from Raharney, and they've really pushed on. But Murta is a class act. Look, I played with him for Leinster a few years ago. He's big, he's strong. He probably minds himself a little bit better. He gets himself ready for the big games, and he always performs on the big day. He's you know, he's one of those guys that, again, would have made any county team that's out there.
Yeah, exactly. Brian, thanks very much.
Thanks, Willie. Better run. Good luck.
Good stuff. All right, great stuff. We'll be back on Thursday, and we'll talk to you all then. See you then. Good luck.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing houses for f***ing 10 years.